Okay, hello everyone. Good afternoon, good morning, Shavua Tov. Hope everyone had a restful, although clearly quiet, Shabbos. Sundays we've been doing Pirkei Avos, and today, for today's shiur, I'd like to study a very well-known Mishnah towards the end of the first Perek of Pirkei Avos, and that is the Mishnah in Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yud Bet. Hillel v'Shamai kiblu mihem. Hillel and Shammai were the last of the Zugos, the famed pairs that make up the structure of the first Perek of Avos, the Zugos. Hillel and Shammai, they were the next generation of leaders after Shmaya v'Abtalion. Hillel was the Nasi, Shammai was the Avbezdin, so they are the next line in the chain. And the Mishnah very famously teaches us now in the name of Hillel, that Hillel Omer, have a mitalmidav shel Aaron. We should be like the students of Aaron, Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. We should love peace and pursue peace. Ohev Asabrios. We should love people, Umakarvan the Torah, and bring them close to Torah. So that is the Mishnah that I'd like to study with you, and it's a very well-known Mishnah, and I think it's very rich, and we'll have a lot of insightful information to hopefully enlighten us. So first of all, in terms of the opening statement of the Mishnah about how we should follow the model of Aaron, who was Ohev Shalom Verodev Shalom, so many of the Mefarshim here on our Mishnah quote the famous Medrash, which the source is in the Avos Rebbe Nasson, that's who the Bar Tanura and the Rambam quoted from, about how Aaron was an incredible, Aaron HaKohen, the Aaron, was incredible at not only valuing, loving peace, but genuinely facilitating it, literally running after it. And to paraphrase it, I won't read it inside for the sake of time, but the Avos Rabbi Nasan, this is in Perek Yud Bet of the Avos Rabbi Nasan, talks about how when Aaron would find out that two people had gotten to a fight, he would go over to one of them and say, you know, the other guy feels so, so terrible. He's just too embarrassed to come over to you. And that person would be inspired to make the first move. Then Aaron would go to the other guy and say, you know, the first guy, he feels so bad. He really would love to come over to you, but he's just too embarrassed. So each one of them would be motivated to take the first step based on Aaron's creative, shall we say, description of the environment. Umitoch kach, says the Avos Rabbi Nasan, k'shoy pogim zeh bezeh, havo menashkim zeh zeh. Each one would come to the meeting, so to speak, based on what Aaron had told them, thinking that the other one truly, genuinely wanted peace. And in fact, this is part of a larger idea, which will way beyond the scope of our brief shiur today, but Chazal do tell us in other places that mishanim et pnei shalom, that in order to make peace, one is allowed to stretch the truth a little bit when one has sincere and practical motivations for facilitating peace. And this teaching of the Avos Rabbi Nasan and Aaron HaKohen as the role model is the basis for that. Rashi and his Talmidim, the Machzor Vitri, actually quote an even more extreme story about a certain man who was having a very big fight with his wife, and he made a neder on the wife that she would have no benefit from him unless he would spit in the eye of the Kohen Gadol, and assuming that there's no way she would be able to do this. And Aaron heard about this, and he pretended that he had something in his eye, and he went over to the woman, and he said, I just need a little lubrication to get this out of my eye. Could you spit in my eye to get it out of my eye? So an incredibly dramatic and extreme example of Aaron going to the unbelievable lengths in order to help allow a marriage to get back together. As Mefarshim quote that the model or the inspiration for all of this is actually a pasuk in the Navi Malachi in Perek Bet, which says, "Ubishlomam ubimishor halach iti," that in order to bring shalom and mishor, you pursued Verabim Heshiv Avon, and not only the first part of the Mishnah, but the second part, how he brought back many people from sin. And the very next pasuk talks about the Kohen Sifedat, that we know that it's clear from the context that those psukim in Malachi and Perek Bet are talking about the Kohen. So you see from those psukim a description of the Kohen as someone who is not only facilitating peace and harmony, shalom, but also Heshiv Me Avon. And these two models are apparently what Aaron HaKohen exemplified, and it's what Hillel is telling us, having me talmid of shel Aaron, we should be like Aaron, we should become virtual Kohanim and be like students of Aaron. On that note, it is interesting that some of the Mefarshim, before we get into the two specific teachings of the Mishnah, just in that introductory phrase, there are mafarshim that note the fact that the Mishnah as an introduction says we should be mitalmidav shel Aaron. In what sense does that make me a Talmud? I never met Aaron. I never sat in on his shir. I never had a conversation with him. I didn't read a book that he wrote. What does that mean to be a student of somebody? So what you see from this, it may seem very obvious or intuitive, but I don't know if it really is, and at least a number of Mefarshim feel that this is a good opportunity to underscore the point that you see that to be a Talmud, to be a student, it's possible even if you never met the person, even if you never spoke to the person. But if you're inspired by a person and you're motivated to truly emulate someone's behavior, if you can truly do that, that makes you a Talmud, a student, even though you never met the person. So even though we're living thousands of years later, if we are inspired by the life and the teachings of Aaron and we actually internalize this into our own lives, we can look ourselves in the mirror and say, yes, we are Talmidim of none less than Aaron HaKohen. And obviously that works kal v'chomer with people even closer to our day, but people who we may never have had the privilege to study from in any formal sense. But if we can study their writings, learn from their lives, and really internalize it, we see from this Mishnah we have a right to call ourselves mitalmidav of X or Y, just like we are calling ourselves if we can personify this from the Talmidim of Aaron HaKohen. Another group of Mefarshim wonder why the Mishnah goes out of its way to tell us that we should do these things by being mitalmidav shel Aaron. Why not, if these are really values, for example, Oev Shalom Verodev Shalom, why doesn't the Mishnah just say, Hillel Omer, Hevi Rodev Shalom Voev Shalom? Why does the Mishnah have to first introduce the tzivoy, the command, with be like Aaron, be like a Talmud of Aaron, and love peace and pursue peace? Why not just cut out the middleman and go directly to the punchline? The Mishnah should just say, Hillel Omer, Hevi Ovev Shalom Verodev Shalom. Why interject, be like a student of Aaron, in the middle? And incredible commentary, the Medrash Shmuel, I believe I quoted this in last week's Perkei Avos Shir. The Medrash Shmuel is a very important commentary. It was a contemporary, more or less, of Yosef Karo, wrote like a Shita Mekubetzet, like a collection from a few hundred years ago on Perkei Avos. So the Medrash Shmuel says something so powerful. He says, if we would just say, love peace and pursue peace, it wouldn't help us much. Why not? Because everyone, if you ask them, everyone truly thinks that they love peace, that they only do things that facilitate peace, that they pursue peace, that they are the source of all peace and harmony in their respective community. Says the Medrash Shmuel, you could ask the most argumentative, divisive person in the community, and they could look you straight in the eye, they could pass a lie detector test. Of course I love peace, because everyone can rationalize all the things that they're doing based on some, maybe it's warped, but based on their version or their sense of what they think pursuing peace means. And therefore, says the Medrash Shmuel, the only way to truly have people do what is necessary and truly be lovers and pursuers of peace is to give us a objective high standard of Aaron HaKohen. You may think you are Ohev Shalom, you may think you're Rodev Shalom, but you have to judge yourself against the standard created by Aaron. If you can live up to that standard, so then maybe you truly are an Ohev Shalom, Barodev Shalom. But just because you think you are, doesn't mean you really are, and really everyone would probably say that they are, because everyone's rationalized. If you ask, you have an entire group of people, a whole neighborhood, raise your hand if you don't like peace, right? Everyone says they're part of the peace movement. Everyone says they're pro-peace. But it's a meaningless thing, because everyone can rationalize whatever their position is based on that. Therefore, says the Medrash Shmuel, it starts off with having me tell me shall Aaron. But yet, no, this is what it means to be peace. If you're really following like Aaron, then taka, then you have a right to call yourself pro-peace. You're Oev Shalom. But if not, then you're falling short. In that vein, the famous Svardi Poseg, Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulai, the Chida, in one of his 100-plus books, he's one of the most prolific authors of all time, the Chida, in one of his books, says, you see, the reason that the Mishnah says, be like a Talmud of Aaron, is that it's not enough to just do the action, but rather one has to truly personify it. It has to become part of your essence. It should be part of your personality, like it was part of Aaron's personality. It's not just being Oev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. It's becoming an Ish, or an Isha, of Shalom, being a true person whose part of your essence is peace, and that is something that we are, that adds based on the introductory phrase of Havim Mitam Midav Shel Aharon. And finally, one last piece of introduction before we get to the two specific teachings is that a number of Mefarshim ask, once now you've explained to me why it's not enough to just say pursue peace or love peace, but we have to introduce Aharon as a middleman, okay, so then why do we seem to bump it down by saying Havi Mitam Midav Shel Aharon, be like a student of Aharon? Why not just say be like Aharon? Right? We know when I was a kid, you know, and I think it's probably today still considered one of the most famous advertising slogans of all time, right? That when Nike was selling the sneakers of Michael Jordan, they made the famous phrase, be like Mike, right? Nike didn't come out and say, be like the protégés of Mike. Be like the people who look up to Mike. It said, be like Mike. Now, of course, you couldn't really be like Michael Jordan, and really that is what you were trying to say. But it was certainly much more effective to go say, be like Mike. So a number of Mefarshim say, why doesn't our Mishnah say, be like Aharon? Why does it say, be like the students of Aharon, having me Talmid of Shel Aharon HaKohen? It should have just said, be like Aharon HaKohen. So here also, the Medrash Shmuel and the Alshech, two more or less contemporaries, basically point out that there's a certain level of realism and humility that's built in. This isn't Madison Avenue, this isn't a marketing slogan, and therefore we are acknowledging that there is no way to be truly Mamish, if you will, like Aharon. To be truly on Aaron's level, he was a once in many, many, many generations. He maybe was a once in history. But nevertheless, even though it may be unrealistic to say I can be like Aharon, but I can be a mitamidav of Aharon. I can be X number of steps below, but in the same kivun, in the same direction as Aharon. That's something that is always a balance, whether it's for parents or for teachers. We always want, you know, or for ourselves for that matter, we want to shoot for the stars, so that hopefully even if we fall short, we land on the moon, as the saying goes. So here also, on the one hand, there is a focus on trying to have high standards, to be like Aharon. On the other hand, if it just said, be like Aharon, since it's pretty much impossible to be on his level, so then once we fell short, we might give up, but we might not try at all. So therefore, says the Medrash Shmuel, says the Alshech, having me Talmid of Shel Aharon, we know you can't be Aharon, but you can be, you can be. It's not easy, but you can be a Talmid of Aharon. You can be a little bit lower, but you could be on a level that is still approximate and inspired by Aharon. Okay, with all of that, I think it was important, but introductory remarks, we're now ready to focus on, respectively, the two teachings that the Mishnah tells us. The first one being, Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. And the Mefarshim point out that this is inspired by the Pasuk, of course, in Tehillim, in Perek Lamed Daled, Bakeh Shalom, Viradfehu, right? Bakeh Shalom, Viradfehu is loosely parallel to Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. But even whether it's the Pasuk or the language of our Mishnah, it begs the question, and Rabbeinu Yonah is among the first to ask it, which is why the need for the double Lashon. Rabbeinu Yonah, in his commentary to our Mishnah, says, why not just pick one of them? You know, be a lover of peace. You know, isn't that, if I love peace, isn't it Mamela that I'll pursue it? Why do I need to have to say both phrases? Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. And Rabbeinu Yonah gives an incredibly important and insightful statement into not only a peace and Shalom, but I think in general, human nature. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, there are a lot of people who sincerely, truly love a certain value, truly identify with and are inspired by and want to emulate a certain value. They are truly lovers of peace. Yesh bnei adam ohavim oso belibam. They genuinely, truly, it's not a fake out, they truly love peace. However, says Rabbeinu Yonah, but lo she yitrechuhu atzman lasum shalom ba'olam, ve'einam holchin badarchei shalom, acha osin esapula. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, it's one thing to love peace, but a lot of people who love peace don't necessarily pursue it. And that could be for any one of a number of reasons, if I want to elaborate on Rabbeinu Yonah. He's not 100% clear why this would be so. But psychologically, it could be for any one of a number of reasons. Sometimes people are just lazy. We have to acknowledge that reality. Sometimes people are just lazy. But sometimes people, you know, it's easy to rationalize. We're busy, we're preoccupied. We know that there's a need in the community, and we genuinely, truly wish that there would be a better situation. We wish there would be peace. But we say to ourselves, no, someone else will take care of it. Someone else will do it. Right? It's not only true for Shalom, which is our topic, it's true for many things. You're familiar with a need in the community about a chola, someone who's sick, who needs bikur cholim, or other chesed things, or raising money for the shul, or for the school, or any, literally, no limit. It would be every single thing you're thinking of. you know, people, there are people who genuinely value it, who genuinely would pursue it, who genuinely hope that the right thing happens, but for whatever reason, don't do anything about it. Says Rabbi Yonah, what our mission is coming to teach us is, it's nice to have your heart in the right place, but it's wholly insufficient. It's not enough to just be an Ohev Shalom. A person has to be a Rodev Shalom. It's not enough just to think it, or as we might say in the vernacular, talk the talk. You got to walk the walk. If you really, truly love it and you really care about it, you have to act on it and do things in a very active, in a proactive way in order to facilitate and to pursue the peace. A slightly different answer, another answer is given by the Maharal in his commentary to the Mishnah, as well as the Barbanel and others. And they say that there's actually a practical difference, and Ohev Shalom and Rodev Shalom are speaking about two different things. That Ohev Shalom is referring to a person who has the right midos and therefore preemptively is not the kind of person who's going to create fights, right? We all know, unfortunately, painfully, for some of us it's in our family, for other of us it's in our neighborhood or our community or our broader social circle or our work environment, there are certain people who are simply argumentative, difficult, inevitably and almost always getting into fights with people. So Ohev Shalom commands us, charged us not to be that person, to be the opposite, to genuinely be the kind of person who's not starting fights, looking for fights. You're not the disruptive. You're not the troublesome party. That makes you an Ohev Shalom. However, lots of times, whether you're looking for it or not, Machlokes finds you, right? It takes two people to make peace, but it only takes one person to make war. People start up with lots of things or create problems either directly with you or in the community, which indirectly affects you. And Rodev Shalom says, even if you weren't the cause, you're the right kind of person. If we cut you open, your DNA is to be an Ohev Shalom. But nevertheless, it found you. It landed on your doorstep. There's a problem. It's not enough to just say, even if you can honestly look in the mirror and say, but I didn't cause this. I didn't start the fire. It's not my fault. Rodev Shalom says, it doesn't matter. Even if you didn't cause it, if it wasn't your fault, if it's not because of you and your personality, nevertheless, be a Rodev Shalom. Do whatever it takes now that the fire is there to extinguish it. Okay, so those are two different interpretations for why it's not sufficient to just to be Ohev Shalom, but also to be a Rodev Shalom. Let's turn our attention now to the second teaching of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah continues and says, Ohev Esabrios u'mekarvan l'Torah. It is interesting just to note that I think that while it's true that most people think that this end of the Mishnah, the Ohev Esabrios u'mekarvan l'Torah, is a continuation of the first part of the Mishnah and also connected to Aaron HaKohen, it just should be aware that not everyone actually believes that. There are some of Farshim who see this as kind of a standalone statement, but I think that's harder to maintain. And certainly, I think most Mefarshim disagree with that. Most Mefarshim say that this second half of the Mishnah, Ohev es Abrios, love people, Makarvan the Torah, is also connected and an outgrowth to Aaron HaKohen. In fact, that very same Avos Rabbi Nelson, which we started with, which mentioned the story of Aaron HaKohen running to two people who were in a fight, or running to a husband and wife who were in a fight, so the Mefarshim, like the Bar Tanur and the Rambam, Rabbeinu Yonah, others, they all quote the continuation also in the Avos Rabbi Nelson that explains how was it that Aaron was loving people, was Ohev es Abrios, Makarvan l'Torah. So the Medrash there says very famously that when Aaron would hear that someone sinned, whatever the sin was, it doesn't specify, but when Aaron would hear that someone sinned, Aaron would go out of his way to then befriend the person, never bringing up the issue whatsoever, just all of a sudden taking a liking and an interest to the person, such that the person would eventually be mitbayesh, a person would be humiliated, not to anyone else, but he would be humiliated to himself, Omer, and he would say to himself, Ilu haya yodea tzadik zeh ma'asai ha-ra'im, kama haya misrachek mimeni, mitoch kach haya chozer lemutav. The person, not realizing that Aaron knew about it all along, the person would be insecure and embarrassed and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe Aaron's close with me. Meanwhile, Aaron doesn't know that I've done X or Y in private. Aaron didn't know that I do X or Y last night. I can't possibly, and basically the approximate and the closeness to being close to Aaron would itself create a certain standard and expectation which would inspire the person to be chozer b'tshuva. That's the Medrash, and that is quoted by, again, many Mefarshim, clearly linking this last part of the Mishnah with the first part, that it's all back to Aaron HaKohen. Interestingly, A number of Mefarshim are sensitive to the language of this phrase, which in a way that might start off or sound very technical, but actually provides for a very far-reaching and profound teaching. And that is, why does it say Ohev es HaBrios? Why use that term Brios? Why not say Ohev es Yisrael? Right? Usually we think of this as a way of saying Ahavas Yisrael, loving our fellow Jew. But if it's really meant to be talking about loving our fellow Jew, so why does it use the term brios? Brios is usually a more universalistic term, right? Kavod HaBrios is something that we generally think of as being a universal human idea. Avas HaBrios or Ohev es HaBrios sounds very universal. It doesn't sound like something that would necessarily be only limited to Ahavas Yisrael. So in fact, both the Netziv of Volozhin as well as the Tanya in the very well-known Perek Lamed Beis, Lev, which is his parak about Ahavas Yisrael, so both the Tanya and the Netziv make the same point, that even if a person is acting outwardly like one of the brios, if you would just see the person based on their behavior, they're sinning, they're not following the halacha, they're not keeping the Torah, on an outward level, they're indistinguishable from a Gentile. They're not acting in a way that would make them clearly identifiable as a Jew because they're not following the halacha. Even so, Ohev es HaBrios, that Ahavas Yisrael applies to everyone, even people who are sinners and even people whose outward behavior and appearance makes them indistinguishable from any of the other brios in the world. I'll mention just quickly in passing that the Tanya famously points out that there are sources that say we're supposed to hate the sinner. So the Tanya explains it doesn't mean to hate the sinner. We fundamentally have to love every Jew, but rather we have to hate the sin in the person. We have to, with a tremendous precision, be able to say that part of the person, that I reject. But the overall person, that we have to love, Ohev es HaBrios. The famous student of the Baal Shem Tov, the Magid Mizmezrich, connects this very beautifully to the pasuk in Vayikra, Lo Sisna es Achicha Bilvavecha, which again, according to the simple pshat, means don't hate your fellow Jew, Achicha, Bilvavecha, in your heart. But the Magid Mizmezrich, in a classic kind of Hasidic turn of phrase, says even if the person is displaying no outward signs that he's Achicha, the way he's acting, the way he's talking, the way he's behaving, that doesn't at all show the person is Achicha. But rather, the only reason you know he's Achicha is Bilvavecha. He has a Pinta Layid. He has a Nitzotz of Kedusha. We believe as an axiom of matter of faith, as axiomatically, that there's some little bit of Hashem, of Kedusha in his heart. It's Bilvavecha. But other than that, in terms of his outward demeanor, his behavior, his actions, he's not acting at all like Achicha. Nevertheless, still, lo sisna, we don't hate him, but rather, as we just saw, Ahavas HaBrios, we have to love everybody. Last but not least, just to conclude, a final point, and that is perhaps the most famous in the Mishnah, which is what is the connection between these two final phrases? What is the connection between Ohev es HaBrios u'makarvan l'Torah? Are those two independent things, or are they really one in the same? So some of Farshim really see them as independent. They're both important. You should love people, and you should also do Kiruv. However, others see a stronger connection. The Baal Shem Tov's grandson, the Tolos Yaakov Yosef, as well as the Chavetz Chaim, point out that part of loving a person is being makarv on the Torah, is worrying about the Ruchnis. In other words, people often think of doing chesed for people merely in terms of their physical needs. Not to shortchange that. It's very, very important, whatever community we find ourselves in, to be giving tzedakah, to be doing acts of chesed, to be helping people who have all sorts of needs, whether they're financial or otherwise. To help a person in their physical needs is absolutely something very important. I think it's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to say, another person's gashmius is your ruchnius. Right? Worrying about other people's physical needs is something that's not physical at all for you. It's a spiritual matter for you. That's for sure true. But says the Tolos Yaakov Yosef, says the Chavetz Chaim, Ohev es HaBrios u'makarvan l'Torah. Don't think that you've exhausted your love for the person by just worrying about if they have a few extra dollars, by just worrying about if they can pay their tuition or whatever other tzedakah you're doing for the person. Also, part of loving the person is worrying about his or her neshama. Makarvan l'Torah, if you truly care about the person, you want them to be on the right track, you want them to be spiritually whole as well. And last but not least, the many, many Mefarshim already of with the Tiferes Yisrael here in the Mishnayos, the Chazon Ish, many, many others point out that there's an even more direct connection. And that is that if you're working backwards, if the ultimate goal is to be Makarvan l'Torah, whether it's the Kiruv sense, the way we use it in the modern terms, or just teaching Torah to our children, teaching Torah to our students, anyone who are trying to inspire in a positive way, the only way it'll work is if it's Ohev HaSabrios. If a person first feels like they are loved by the teacher, loved by the parent, loved by the role model, that person genuinely cares about the person, only then will their heart and their minds be open so that you can be Makarvan LeTorah. So these are just some of the ideas, again, I think that I was able to find and I think are worth analyzing in this Mishnah, a very famous and worthy Mishnah. I think it calls on all of us with the different layers that we've seen from all the different nuances in the diuk in the language of the Mishnah, as well as the more basic teachings of the Mishnah, that all of us hopefully can aspire to be at all times, and especially at this time, hopefully true, if not virtual, Talmidim of Aharon HaKohen. Everyone should have a wonderful day, and thank you, as always, for joining us.